by the Federation of Labour, a strong, dedicated Irishman. To me, a man like this, I respected. And we were very good friends. He liked me too, because I wouldn't take any guff. I couldn't stand it. I couldn't stand the talks of Mrs. Lilly and some of the other rich women. They nauseated me.
Were you really a minority opinion?
Yes.
Most of the working women did.
I was a minority opinion among this certain group. There were others like me, but the majority were nothing. You know, most of the people are nothing. Most of the women are nothing. They have no opinion. You come to an executive board, and there are 30 women sitting there. 2, 3, 4 will speak up, the rest will sit. And this also makes me, once I was sitting with a girl there, she was a Polish girl, and she wanted to say something, but she didn't. I poked her, get up and say it. Get up and say it. You disagree with something, get up and say it. You see? A lot of these people don't. It's the same thing now. You come to a meeting, even now, 1, 2, 3 people get up, express their opinions for or against, the rest of them sit. You know that, I don't have to tell you. And this has been going through all the time. Same thing was in 1917 or 1956 or 1974. It's the same thing. Most people don't say anything. They agree with you, but they don't get up to say it. You see? They agree with you. I have it now. Right now, in my old age, I have it. I come to me. He agrees with me. He wouldn't get up and say it. Why don't you say it? You agree with me. Why don't you say it? It was to a meeting, and then I quit, I didn't accept it anymore because it made me sick. After we sat at the committee and I said, proposed something, and a person tells me that he agrees with me 100% and all that, but come to the central committee meeting, he doesn't say it. Why don't you say it? Well, you don't want to get, you don't want to fight with people. You know, most people, you know how they are, passive.
So you think most women agree with you but were afraid to say anything?
Were afraid to say anything.
Were they intimidated by the women you think
were talking about?
No.
Well, they weren't intimidated.
Very weird.
See, the characters of workers are the same as the characters of people that you meet. They're not any different. You meet them at the university.
Yeah.
You meet them in business. And you meet them in unions. They're all the same. There are here and there. You know, I tell you, I once talked to a group, and I put a big circle on the board, and I said, this is our world. And I put a second circle in our world. These are the followers. And I put a third circle in our world. I says, these are the carriers, carry it out. Then I put a little circle in the center. These are the people who start things up. And it's the same thing in the union, the same thing in the legislature, the same thing in every part of our world. Only a minority have the nerve and the guts to fight and not be afraid whether you think good of me or not. Remember that. You'll find it in all through your life. Because I'm 76 years old and I found it.
It just seems hard for me. I don't, you know, it's hard to understand why
in the union is
women
the same
stay
thing.
In the lead. Why working women stay in the lead? It's just mainly public relations.
Public relations. I think that in the 20s and in the 30s, The woman stayed in the elite, played an important part in public relations, because people that had money and that were politically representative people had respect for them. And if they had respect for us, then it, you know, revolved to us too.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is a very important point.
That's at Brooklyn.
Okay.
Could you discuss, what was the typical day there? I mean, what did you do?
Typical day. You got up about 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
We had divided the group of students into committees, what they had to do, because we were self-sufficient.
Who divided them?
We had a committee. We elected a committee. Say we came to Brookwood today.
Mm-hmm.
There were 40 people. Out of the 40 people, we elected a committee to conduct the daily routine of Brookwood. It included making food, serving food, seeing that the place is kept clean, and taking care of a household.
Was the committee of all students?
All students. Oh, nobody else but students. Every month, we elected a new committee. New month. Now, say 1 month, there were a committee of 5 to prepare the food, a committee of 5 to serve the food.
And these, were these, the committee that you elected appointed these people? Is that how it worked?
No, we elected them on the floor.
Oh, you elected the committee to
on the floor, yes.
I see.
So we elected Ms. Goodman, Ms. Holland, Ms. This, Ms. That, Mr. Saw, Mr. This. You're the committee for preparing food. You divide among yourselves. 5 people don't have to go into the kitchen, 2 people go in one day, 2 people go in another, but you are responsible for this amount of the food.
I see.
And then you manage yourself. 2 people go in every morning to make breakfast, 2 people go in every morning, day to make lunch, that's your job. The same thing, you see that the place is clean. The same thing, just like that, two committees, for instance, I'll show you. And was elected from students, because the students did all the work.
So you had, 10 people would work per month, about?
Yeah.
So, you had 5, and then it would switch off to somebody else?
Yes.
Was there any control over, the living arrangement?
Well, we had a dormitory.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 girls, 2 boys in a room. That's very easy.
Oh, just one dorm.
One big dorm, and there were cottages. There were 3, 4, 5 cottages that I remember. 5 cottages.
So what was it decided who went in the cottages and who went in the dorm?
Well, I guess they picked, they had a ball with numbers of the places, and each one picked something else out. And then they changed sometimes. They one didn't like the other ones, and they changed. Now, for instance, I came 2 days late, so a girlfriend there, you know, picked my number for her, to be with her. You know what I mean? She wanted me to be with her. You know, it changed that way. But that's what we were. We were 2 girls in the dormitory. The cottages mostly were boys, and it was the same thing with them.
Did you know Sarah Lawson?
Yeah, very well, from Chicago, and amalgamated.
Was she Brooklyn?
She was not there when I was there. She was there a year later after I was gone. She was a Chicago girl. She worked for the amalgamated. She was a business agent.
Ah. Okay. Were you in any special leadership classes there?
In what?
What are you talking about?
I'm laughing because we had in Brookwood people who came from various parts of, I told you this, who really didn't know how to read or write.
Yeah, and
he Master called me in and asked him whether I would not do it, because he knew that I had already 2 years university of Wisconsin, you know, I had 3 years of university. So he asked me whether I would undertake, you know, to do that. I said, I'd be glad to. So I had twice a week, I would meet with a group of people and teach them, you know, how to read and how to read a book and how to, what to do with it.
What is that?
And prepare papers.
Yeah, you told me that.
What are the subjects
that they teach there?
Political science, history, and the isms. Mm-hmm. We had anarchism, a class in anarchism, a class in socialism, a class in democracy, and government. And in government class, we took up the question of how people are elected, how people are nominated, and anything like that. Then we have, of course, we have history, the United States history, European history, ancient history. We have history. And we had economics, and we had labor unions, how labor union is organized.
Organizing techniques. That's your typical day. We only got to use that up at 7.
All right. Now, say we get people going to make breakfast. And then by the time we get dressed and washed and stuff, it would be 7:30, we would go downstairs and we would serve breakfast. Everybody would sit down and serve breakfast. By the time we would be through with all that and taking away, it was about 8:30, we started classes. And we had classes till noon. And noon we used to go in for lunch. And after we got through with lunch, and at 1 o'clock, you know, we started classes again. And the classes ran on until about 5 o'clock, and 5 o'clock we were through. And then we went to our rooms, whatever we wanted to do,
mm-hmm.
And evenings were free.
Make
lessons. Everybody had to make lessons. The only time we had something in the evening was Saturday night we had a dance. Mm-hmm. So whoever wanted to dance and stuff like that, we did that. And other nights, if there was some speaker coming in, they wanted to give a lecture of some kind, then we would either fit them in during the day or fit them in during the evening, whatever they did.
If you have a chore like you're preparing food, did you get a class early then? Did you go prepare lunch?
Yes.
So when the class is done, was that evenly distributed?
Everybody was evenly distributed.
And did men do food as well?
Oh, yes, definitely. Men did food. Say, for instance, Phil and I would be in the kitchen and we'd have to peel potatoes, and they came peel the potatoes I used to cook, because
right.
He didn't know how to cook.
I like that.
And then washing dishes. We all did that together, you know.
Did the members
just start up? No. Oh, we had wonderful boys. Nobody ever resisted anything. It was such a homogeneous, beautiful group.
Really?
Oh, I'm telling you, I don't know, I don't remember anywhere when anything like this existed, as it existed in Brooklyn. There was such a homogeneous group, and everybody was just like the sisters and brothers. I mean, it was just wonderful, just wonderful. I mean, if anything was a little bit difficult, there was never a chance that a fellow wouldn't want to help out or something like that, even if he wasn't on the committee or something. I don't remember even that one case. I don't even remember one case. Everybody was really, really wonderful. We had a wonderful group of people the year that I was there. I was there 1 year.
Who taught classes?
Well, Musty had classes in history.
Mm-hmm.
David Seipas taught economics. You know, economics that had to do theoretically and with the labor unions. I mean, you see, economics takes in labor unions, but say, for instance, the first half a year, you know, it was not so much labor unions as theoretical economics, you know, that It's a very wonderful class. She gave a wonderful class. And we had Miss Peters was English. She taught English. She was an English woman, tall English woman. She was a vegetarian. And she also acted. She was, let's see, what was her religion? She was, a Christian scientist.
Mm-hmm.
And she came from England, and she was a wonderful teacher, Miss Peters, tall and thin, like some of the English women are. Miss Peters, and then we had another teacher who is working for the international. In fact, I recommended him. I can't think of his name. It was very good. He had very good teachers.
Did you know when Linda Kerr was there?
No.
What do you think? Why do you think it was? The group worked together so well.
Everybody wanted to learn. And everybody were workers, all came from different unions. There was such understanding, you know, from one another, you see. And we became very good friends because we all really wanted the same thing.
Did that have anything to do with the way the school was run? Or
did
you
be
able to
have one? Anyway?
Yeah.
Well, I'd say that Master was a big influence. He was a big influence.
How?
He'd talk, you know, he'd always eat with us, you know, and everything else. And the way he'd talk about humanity and humans, you know, I think it had it had a great impact upon the feelings of the students, because he was a humanitarian, really. He was a great humanitarian. Although, you know, later on they drove him into the Third International, you know, and he became active in the Trotskyite movement, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't know that?
No.
Oh, yeah.
I knew he was in the I-1, but I didn't
know. After he left Brookwood, he became very active in organizing the Third International, which was a Trotsky, I think. See? That's when they killed Trotsky in Mexico. What year was that? I don't remember exactly. But he became a Trotskyite. Now, I met him when he was a Trotskyite. I was in New York and I made it my business to go to see him. And we had a little argument, but nice. You know what I mean? I told him that I think it's rather silly. You know, thing like that. That the people who organized the Third International were just people who didn't get what they wanted from the Second International, the Communist International. And I had not much respect for them. And he disagreed with me, and he thought that they were great idealists. And I said, well, maybe it seems that way to you, because A.J. must be, I think, you're a preacher. I'm not a preacher. I see bad in people as well as good. You don't. And you think that people really tell you the truth, that this place is where they are. Well, he was in the Third International for 3 years. And he was working very hard, but he succeeded very little. And he went back to the pump. So he died as a minister. Because that's where he came from, the first place.
He was after an
anti-war thing. Oh, he was that, sure. Third International, he was going to be after an anti-war. What's the matter with him? Of course.
No, later, I mean, in the
60s. I imagine he would be anti-war. Well, I didn't see him at that time, but the fact of the matter is that he went back to the pulpit, and he was on 14th Street in that church. And he died as a minister. Did you know that? Yes. So you see, he was a great humanitarian, And Rukwit to him meant a life, that he could do something for workers, for people who are in the mines or in the factories and have no chance for education. And it was supported by the labor movement, although a couple of rich women gave scholarships. Yes, they didn't have much.
So they didn't really
have that much. They did what they could, but what they did do is get a few women who gave money for Brookwood, besides that unions sent people on scholarships.
Right.
So there's a three-way street there. But Master was an exceptional individual. And
you went with him the second commissary?
Yeah, never. No. He never belonged to the Socialist Party. He never belonged to the Communist Party.
How did you end up in the
Somebody sold him a bill of goods. I'm telling you. He was very sore when Trotsky was expelled from Russia. He went to Mexico, and a communist who became a friend of his killed him. That's what made him, you see. This is the thing that triggered the whole situation. And because of Trotsky, he did think a lot of him. Of course, when we talked about communism, you know, he talked a lot of Lenin and Trotsky. But the thing is that the very fact that they could expel him, and the very fact that they themselves killed him, that triggered the situation. And then New York had a movement, Trotsky movement, and they got him in.
They didn't help.
That's what they did. They did that, you know. But the thing is that he was very, very, very disappointed and disheartened. And he then left to be pulpit.
Oh, you said last time that
Was that a political statement? Well, no, that's a new ballgame altogether.
Okay.
It wasn't us.
No, I know, but you...
There was a Stoughton near New York, small town of Stoughton. Stoughton, New Jersey. In Stoughton, New Jersey, they organized some sort of a cooperative living. At that time, Emma Goldman was on high horse. And she wrote a book on freedom of sex.
Right.
You know that. That you can get in the library. Now, in Stoughton, New Jersey, they were anarchists, and they believed in free love.
Did you have any anarchists in the IL?
There were some. Not as anarchists. But anyway, I had some friends, anarchists. So, while I came to New York in 1920, I met one of the girls with whom I was in Brookwood, Goldie Sheff. And she's the one who got me the bed in her room, you know, we stayed together in one room. she's still alive, she is very sick, she's an old woman and very sick. She asked me to come to Stoughton for a visit in the weekend. Her mother lived there. And she had a brother who was a financial secretary of the Amalgamated Men's Clothing Organization. And so I came there for a weekend. We came there Saturday. And I got acquainted with them. They had that school for children. And they had a lecture, and I went to the lecture, and Sunday morning, I met two dressmakers, whom I knew very well from New York, Model 25, and another girl. We went to their house, and there were children there, three children. And I said to them, I didn't know you were married. She says, I'm not. See, you're not married, so you have a child. I was very naive. And to me, these things, you know, seemed crazy, you know. I was terribly naive. I was a grown-up girl, but I was naive. And finally they tell me that this little boy's father is a fellow by the name of Goldman, who is a teacher and lives in New York, has a wife and children. And the other girl has a little, the other girl also had, I don't know, a boy or a girl, and she is with a married man that has a wife and a child in New York, and she is there. So, and the other girl, the same thing. So they did it like this. They had the house, one of the girls stayed there and took care of the three children, and the other two were working as dressmakers. And I was flabbergasted. I was just flabbergasted. It was so obnoxious to me. I said, why did you have to have a child from him? And you go to work and take care of him. He doesn't help you. He doesn't help them. He has a wife and he has two children. I said, she said, well, that's, we believe in pure love. I said, screw you on my eye. Why do you have a child with him? And that's what. So, Goldie, you know, thought I was crazy, and I belong to the Elizabethan period, she told me. You belong to the Elizabethan period. I said, maybe I belong to the Elizabethan period, but by golly, I said, no man is going to use me out. I can tell you that right now.
Did they have continuing relationships?
And you are nothing but a goddamn fool, because you have to work in the shop to support that child. See? So to me, it was so ridiculous that, I found out later other things, that other women, you know, did that, did some live with a certain man, and he had a wife and two children. And I went to a banquet. International Sandberg division. I was sitting near a man, a clever man, who's an editor and a writer. And I said to him, I said, if anything is ridiculous to me, this actions are ridiculous. Some of the vice presidents who lived with some girls, and when they came to the banquet, they came with their wife, you know. They didn't come to that girl. That was a period. I am a Goldman period.
Was there birth control available?
I think there was a birth control available. Sure there was. A man could control it, not women.
Nothing for women?
No. There was nothing for women. But there was for men, you know. They used to put on the, on the penis, you know.
Was there abortion?
Oh, sure. They could have had abortion.
How did they
didn't want to.
How would
maybe some of them had abortions, I don't know.
How would they have gone about finding an abortion?
There were doctors, and one knew about the other. They could find an abortion. There were doctors who specialized in abortions. But to me, this was the ugliest thing that I met in New York. I'm telling you that right now.
Didn't the women having feelings?
Nice girls.
So
I once told a man who had a sweetheart, he lived with her. I knew him very well, and I knew his wife very well. His wife lived not far from us. And she was a very educated woman, much more than he. I asked him once, How aren't you ashamed to come home and go into the same bedroom with your wife after you've been with her? He left. He had two children with his wife, a son and a daughter. Beautiful. Gorgeous. His son was gorgeous and a beautiful girl. They must be in the middle age now. He's dead. He was a vice president.
Huh?
And he was a big guy. He was head of this and head of that and head of this and head of that. I worked in 91. I told you, local 91. I was an organizer and a business agent. And we had a manager there. He did the same thing. So when he used to ask me to go out to the restaurant, was downstairs, go for coffee, I said, I wouldn't sit with you at the table. Here, it says, you're my manager. Whatever you say, if you're right, you're right. But I wouldn't sit with you. I said, why? I said, I don't want to be besmirched. See? But New York at that time was full of it. I don't know how it is now. I think that women are more sensible. I really do. I think so. I think it was a period. I really do. And maybe, I don't know.
I understand the lack of solidarity
in the room. Uh-huh. Yeah. That's me. I don't understand that either. I just can't understand it. What do they do? I knew two girls. And you know what happened? The woman girl from Philadelphia, a woman girl, fell in love with a man and married him and went south to Virginia. He lived in Virginia. Do you know that this other man girl went over there and broke up their marriage and brought her back to New York? I don't know what they do. What the men do sexually, I mean, homosexual. So I don't even know what men do.
Well,
that's not your trouble.
I wanted to talk about the strike that you have been working on in the 40s here, and I couldn't find,
yeah.
I don't know anything about it. I've looked, and I couldn't find the information.
Oh, well, so is that so?
You have to tell me everything.
Well, Russ Pizarro, you heard?
Yeah.
You read her book? I have her book too here. She was a very good friend of ours. Rose and I were very close, and so with my husband too. Very close. She came here as an organizer. I had at that time been free. I was in the union until a year before I quit because my boy fell off a tree and hurt his knee very badly in his ankle. So I quit the job and to take care of him. That was in 1937. So I quit. And I went to New York, to Chicago for the summer because my brother had a cottage near the lake. Meanwhile, Rose was preparing here for organization for a strike. So she came into the shop where my husband was working and said, you have to help me.
This is 40?
That's 40.
Did they still have the Allen Ticketing Ordinance now that Allen has?
Yes. So she called Grover out to help her, so he became with her, working together to organize. His job mostly was to try to get agreements. He was very successful. They began to organize shops, and Rose was mostly on the picket line with people. She also had the trouble with the policeman. He's a policeman. But anyway, yeah, it was on a strike.
Uh-huh.
The policeman sent the car, took it away from her, said she hit him. Yeah, she was arrested. Put him in jail, got to take her out, it was a trial. Well, anyway, my husband was helping her, but his work really was to work from the upper part as a strike to the agreement, which he was very successful. Now, I was in Michigan, that is right near Chicago, near the lake. And one morning, I got a telephone call.
In Michigan?
My brother had a cottage there.
Oh, right.
So I get a telephone call early in the morning from the vice president here from Los Angeles by the name of Levy. His name was Luis Levy. I must come back to Los Angeles immediately. Why? The strike is on. Goldberg is very successful. He's signing agreements and has loans to take care of the shops. So I go ahead and take my valise and take my son and come to ship back to Los Angeles. And that's how I got into the union in 1940. Taking care of the shops that were already signed up.
Oh, so you were in session for
it? No, I was a business agent.
Oh, you were a business agent. How did you
like that? Oh, I think so. Yeah, I was a business agent before.
Is there any business agent
in was a business agent in New York?
Well, not many women in business agents, were
there? Oh, yes. Yeah. We had business agents in New York, women, sure.
That was when you were 91.
Yeah.
The children's,
in 1921, 22, 23. I went to Brookwood in
23. Right.
And I came back to Chicago after the lost strike in 24. And in 25, the end of 25, I came to California.
Were you affected by McCarthy
at all? Not necessarily. We were not affected. I'll tell you why. We were not involved in the type of work that McCarthy was after. See, I told you before, I was never a communist.
I read that there was one category. Was it prematurely anti-fascist? Because they were calling people up for that too. If you were against Hitler before the government was against Hitler.
Yeah, well, they didn't call us.
You didn't have to be very radical.
No, I was against Hitler, all right, but we had nothing to do with it.
I want to know more about the split in the union and the dual union and everything, the joint board.
That was 22. You mean the split of 22 and 25, local 22 and 25. Local 22 went to the script makers union. Local 25 went to the blouses. And the local 25... No, Local 22 remained the dressmakers union, and Local 25 went to the blouses. They separated Local 25.
No, I meant more the communists, the communists in
that duel. Oh, well, there was an election, and the communists won. They took over the international.
In
21. They took over the international.
Yeah.
And they cleaned out the treasury. And they were thrown out.
Oh, that's kind of, when you were talking about that, you were talking.
And then Zygmunt came in as president.
You said, we're talking about that meeting with Zimmerman.
The Zimmerman when we had the coke strike?
Right, and you said that later he became a
Lofsonite.
What is that?
The Communist Party had a split. Mm-hmm. Lofstone, who's still alive, and he is the secretary of the AFL-CIO Mini right now. Lofstone, Lovestone.
Oh, Lofstone, okay.
Now, he went to Russia. He wanted to become the chief of the Communist Party in America, but they selected Foster.
Mm.
You remember him. You plenty to read about him. Now, split the Communist Party and formed the Lofstonite Party. Lofstonite. And Charles Zimmerman became a Lofstonite and very active in the Lofstonite Party. That's what I thought.
How did they differ from
that? How did they differ? They were, I don't know really how they differed. They were against the Communist Party, that's all I can tell you. They wanted to be a boss by themselves. I didn't see much difference in them.
I think that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything else?
Well, I think that's it. You've got nothing, an awful lot.